This is HMM correspondent Erica Diggs, and I'm speaking with retired meteorologist Hugh Johnson for his show, As the World Turns, segment 4. How are you doing today, Mr. Johnson?
I'm doing good as always there, Erica, and as the world continues to turn.
So let's get into some questions. So you talked about natural elements affecting the climate, sunspots, volcanoes, and ocean currents. Can you elaborate on how ocean currents contribute to climate change?
Yes. I mean, it's all very complicated, and ocean currents are certainly part of the equation. We could spend a lot of time on this, but I'm going to talk about the basic deal, what's going on. First of all, we talk about the atmosphere, the winds turn just like the Earth does. We have winds in the atmosphere called jet stream, which are high up, and they generally help to carve the daily weather systems across the planet. And we have the same thing in the oceans. We actually have currents in the ocean. Again, this I'm going to do this very basic because we could spend a lot of time, but there's one that a lot of people have heard of called the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream starts in the Gulf of Mexico and is a current that actually ships warm water all the way to Europe. Without the Gulf Stream, Europe would be a lot colder than it is. I was in Ireland a few years ago, and I was amazed how many palm trees there were, even though the latitude of Ireland is 51 degrees, which is way north of our 43 degrees, or 42 and a half, I should say. So, and basically, the climate in Europe would be a lot colder if it weren't for this Gulf Stream. It's a lot milder than it is. If you take 53 degrees or 51 degrees in Canada, north of Quebec City, it's a harsh climate in the winter. It's much colder than here and a heck of a lot colder than Europe. But back to the currents. The currents in the ocean, that's one. Another one people have heard of probably is the El Nino current. And that's a much shorter current that, I mean, does only last. It's very episodic. It only lasts for a couple months, but very intense. It goes across the equator, part of the Pacific, and it can drive the water temperatures up into the 90s across Southern America, killing fish and producing usually very heavy rains in South America, droughts on the other side of Asia. So when this El Nino kicks up, it definitely adds, because it's so warm, a little warmth to the atmosphere. The last strong one we had was in 2016. We had a record-breaking, that was still our warmest year on record and our warmest winter on record right here in Albany. So it does add a little bit of factor in the climate change. Now, this year has been a very mild winter, as we know. I expect it to be colder, but anyways, guess what? We don't have an El Nino this year. We have a neutral current. We don't have a La Nina or an El Nino. We have what's called La Nada. A La Nina is the opposite, where you have a cool pool of water on the equator, not as strong, but it's still pretty defined, and that can cool things down a little bit. There's other currents, too, in the Pacific, one called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. It's a much broader current. It's a little more nebulous, and it acts a lot slower. But it is another one that they have been discovered. There are many currents out there, but the Pacific and the Atlantic are the two biggest bodies of water. So they're the ones that add the most fuel, the most water vapor, which traps heat by itself. Water vapor traps heat just like CO2 does. And it also helps to drive the atmosphere, interacts with the atmosphere, very complex. But when things change in the currents, they can really change the climate. And the Gulf Stream is another classic example. Back in the 1700s, there was a mini ice age in Europe. And some people blame it and it probably was partly due to a very strong sunspot minimum. But I believe the Gulf Stream also weakened a little bit. And that made the difference of having very cold winters in England. The Thames froze many winters in the 1700s. It hasn't done that in a long time. But any change in current like that can alter the climate pretty quickly.
You know, I think you taught our listeners something new today. Who knew there were palm trees in Ireland?
I didn't until I got there.
Right. Okay, so again, how exactly are we as humans contributing to the climate change?
Basically, we're burning fossil fuels, which add CO2 to the atmosphere, which is not a good thing, because before the Industrial Revolution, which began somewhere in the 1700s to 1800, the average amount of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere was about 260 parts per million, which isn't much. It's less than 1%. However, now we've driven over 400 parts per million, and as a result, the Earth has warmed a full degree Celsius, or close to 2 degrees Fahrenheit, warmer than it has. Doesn't sound like much, but we've already seen lots of strange things going on. going on that is causing this warming. And guess what? We are continuing to put more CO2 in at an exponential rate. China and Mexico are probably the worst offenders, but we're up there too.
Do you really think we can reverse how much CO2 we put into the atmosphere? Like, is that really possible?
It is possible, but it's going to take a while. There are some estimates that it could take, are you ready for this, Erica?
Yes.
It could take up to 1,000 years to reverse what we put in already. Now, that's the worst case scenario. There are technologies, I think they're working on it. They're trying to actually be able to take some of the CO2 out of the atmosphere. That's huge. It's like taking a bucket and trying to take the ocean and pour it out onto the beach, you know, take the ocean, and it's going to take a long time to do that. But meanwhile, we continue to blitz the atmosphere with CO2, and it's not going to change anytime soon unless we really do something about it.
What do you see happening if CO2 goes unchecked? Like, what is the worst thing possible?
Well, the worst thing possible, I mean, I guess if we raise the temperature of the Earth 8 degrees Celsius, there are those who say that could be the end of mankind as we know it. The theory is if it goes either way, on either side of what we know about our average temperature, 57 degrees before the industrial revolution, if we go either side of 8 degrees Celsius, we're in big trouble. And we've only got a degree. We're only an eighth of the way there. But guess what? If we melt the glaciers, especially the ones in the Arctic, which could be melting in the next couple of, maybe even less than a decade, we're going to add more heat because the glaciers reflect heat off them. They're like insulating, but that will no longer be the case. So that will increase the rate even more. And also that will help release methane from the areas that are covered by ice. And methane is a much more CO2 or a heat trapping gas than CO2. So that would, and it also is unbreathable, unlike CO2. So that would be a really bad thing. And then we could accelerate the temperature pretty quickly. Some say it could happen within the next, by 2100. Probably that's pretty bad case scenario, but it is possible. Seas will rise. They're rising already a fraction of an inch a year. It's already tripled in the last 30 years, so it's 3/10 instead of 1/10 of an inch. Doesn't sound like much, but folks, if you live near the coast, it's huge. And we already saw what happened at Sandy, what happened at New Orleans, what's been happening at Miami on a regular basis, Venice, other places. Well, guess what? Up to 30% of the population lives near the sea, so that could be, and we'll have more crop failures and just a lot of different things going on.
Geez, is there anything we can personally do to start this process? Something we can start from home?
Well, again, I said this before, and I'll say it again, just a little bit. Every mile you drive, a regular car with a regular gas emission gives you about a pound of CO2 into the atmosphere. And if you can just maybe once a week, try not to drive somewhere. I know it's harder to do than it sounds, but if you could walk, like instead of drive somewhere within a half mile to a mile, or bike maybe 5 miles, I really hope that we can cross the barrier of the electric bike. If we can do that, it's still technically not legal, I think, in New York State. Cuomo vetoed the bill. I think it's sitting there. It's kind of like in limbo. There are some issues, but I mean, that would open up for people who are not as really physically fit, that they could still ride pretty comfortably 5-10 miles. And again, not emit any CO2 in the atmosphere. So that are some of the things we can do. We can go to town halls and try to tell people we need to improve biking infrastructure, walking infrastructure, even public transportation, because we do have buses, but we could do better, definitely. And also, we can call Governor Cuomo's office at 518-474-8390. That's 518-474-8390. And we can hit extension 1 and tell them to declare a state of climate crisis in New York State and stop all fossil fuel infrastructure. It's really important, because if we can do that, we can at least begin to curve back the amount of fossil fuel that's still out there being produced, and new companies still trying to, you know, putting money into it and things like that. It needs to be done.
Okay, and what have you done yourself to help curb the emissions of CO2 into the atmosphere?
Well, I try to follow my own lead and try to like say, okay, I'm going to walk somewhere instead of bike. Again, doesn't work that often, but it does. I do try to do it. Bicycle, the same thing. When I worked, which I don't anymore, I used to bike almost half a year, because I was only 3.5 miles from my office. So I biked a lot to work. which I felt really good about, that I was helping out a little bit by not driving. Again, it wasn't that much, but it saved 7 pounds of carbon dioxide every time I didn't bike. So I mean, drive. So meanwhile, we all drive sometimes places we do for fun, and we're all hypocrites, but at least we can get thinking about it and just try to work in that right direction.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Johnson, for sitting down with me. As always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Erica. Have a great day.
You too. This has been HMM correspondent Erica Diggs with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.